KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
First Lady's Focus is brought to you in part by Educational Employees Credit Union, EECU, Smarter Banking since 1934. We're excited to have another very special guest with us today, and as always, I'll let you make the introductions.
Thank you, Julie. Well, we are very fortunate this morning to have a fantastically talented artist and new friend of mine since Joe and I have come to Fresno. Her name is Armin Bacon, and she is an author, a Fresno State alumna, and the list goes on and on. But first off, I'd like to thank you for being here with us this morning, Armin.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love stepping foot on this campus, my alma mater, a place I love to visit, my second home.
It's so nice to meet you. Thank you for being here this morning.
Oh, my pleasure.
I love coming in onto the campus every day and feeling the energy that the students bring to it. It's almost sad when they're on break. Whenever they're not around, I kind of look around like, we've lost something. Where's all the energy source here?
So, Mama Castro, where are my babies?
Right. But you did have a way here to the studio that you hadn't taken before, and that was our little off-road trip in the
That was
park.
Pretty exciting. I'm accustomed to walking the streets of Fresno State, so that was quite a treat.
We brought the cart, and I jumped a curb.
We need a picture of this. Honest to goodness. The presidential golf cart that Mary Castro is screaming across the campus in. Do you speed, Mary?
No, I don't. It can only go so fast, you know. I pushed it.
I know you're a muscle car fan, so yes. I'm a little concerned about you behind the wheel.
I am petitioning for some bigger tires and to lift it, but I don't know if Joe will go for that. But then there won't be anywhere on campus that I can't take people.
It's a special
class. It did sort of take me back to the days when I had one class on one side of the campus and I had to run to get to my second class. And so it was pretty fun being in a little car this morning.
Well, the campus is really excited because we're going to be publishing your newest book, which is called My Name is Armin, A Life in Column Inches. And it goes over 25 years. Can you believe that you have been writing and saving these fantastic stories for over 25 years?
Well, the book is really going to concentrate pretty much on the last 10 years worth of newspaper columns.
Okay.
But really, if you think about the span of time, because it starts with my childhood. Mm-hmm. So it's really, cough, 60 plus years worth of storytelling and memories. And I think I told you earlier, I am a memory keeper.
Yes.
And I think it's so important for us to, first of all, pass down our stories to our children and grandchildren, mm-hmm. but just remember them. And, you know, the older you get, the more precious those memories become. And as a writer, I get lost in them because I'll be writing one sentence and all of a sudden I'll resurrect a memory of playing in the backyard at my mom's, the house
yes.
I grew up in, and the clothesline pole and the talent shows. and I get lost for hours in those stories. Mm-hmm. And I think so many of us have those stories inside of us that are kind of burning to come out,
right.
but we don't make the time to share them, or we think we'll get to them. And as a writer, I mean, that's what I love. It's now what I'm doing almost full time. And so a lot of new stories are coming to the surface, and that's what I write about.
Well, I think the appreciation for stories is something that you and I share and value deeply. Growing up, that was my connection with my grandmother. Her name was Josephine Borges. And when I spent time with her, she would always tell me stories about our family, stories about where we came from, stories about my aunts and uncles growing up. And what I loved was her timeline was determined by what child she was either carrying or feeding, and it wasn't by the year. And that let me know how much she loved being a mother.
Oh.
And I think that oftentimes people don't see the value in their stories, so they don't pass it on because they don't believe it's not fantastic or shiny or spectacular enough. But they don't realize that what it is makes it spectacular
exactly.
and valuable.
And my grandmother, probably maybe just the opposite of yours, she was very loving, but she was very, very private. Mm-hmm. And she had watched many of her siblings in the genocide be murdered. So her stories were very painful.
Yes.
And we always ask, tell us about, you know, your brothers, your our uncles, our grandparents, our other grandparents. But she was very, she would get very tearful. And so she rarely shared those stories. And she went to her grave with many of them kept inside of her. And it was a lesson to all of us to share our stories out loud. And
yes.
of course, when I started writing, I started digging for more of her stories and talking to other relatives. And so I've journaling those also so that all of our cousins and relatives who are still living will have a copy of her story.
And the beautiful thing is that you're telling your family's personal story, but someone who may have lost that opportunity or lost that loved one who had that history, but can read your story and feel a connection to it. They
yes.
can see similarities maybe to their childhood or to their culture, that by you sharing, you're not just doing it for your family. You're able to share it with other people who don't have that chance to share and appreciate
Absolutely.
Their stories.
It can be an appreciation on a much wider scope.
Yes. And, you know, something I learned because I get a lot of emails and snail mail from my readers. And what you find out at the end of the day is that we are all much more alike than we are different.
Yes.
And it doesn't
Absolutely.
Matter what nationality you are, what color you are, how old you are. I receive fan mail from judges, from 90-year-old women, from college students. And we're all looking for that human connection, that connection that says, I'm okay, and yes, I can, and that life is good, and that I'm going to be okay. We all need that affirmation and
yes.
that permission to be. And, you know, I write about not just the shiny parts. I write about the flaws and, you know, my history. I've had a lot of pain and suffering and personal loss in our family. And I feel like it's important to share that. That's the human condition. We're all living, all of us. I mean, that's life.
Right.
And there are beautiful days and there are not so beautiful days. But when you weave them all together, that tapestry, I think, creates a beautiful, beautiful story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm determined to do that. And I love my book writing and my storytelling.
Well, I love how diverse your fan base is. And it's because you do tell the shiny and the not so shiny parts. And the voice that you use is such a welcoming, it draws you in
Thank
to where you,
you
want to read more about the story. It's from a place as if just like how you and I are sitting here, where you feel like you're having a conversation with a friend. And I think that the tone of your voice that comes through in your writing just is a magnet for people to want to be a part of it.
Oh, thank you. You know, talking about grandmothers, my mother has a club of friends and they're all in their 80s. And if I don't speak in that voice, they're the first to let me know I did not hit the mark on my newspaper column. So I have to be honest and use that real language when I write.
Yes.
Or if not, I hear about it, believe me.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
That's so cool.
Yes,
that is
yes,
awesome.
Yes. They keep me honest.
So talking about your childhood, you said that you're born here in Fresno.
Yes.
And what was the size of your family and what was your family's attitude towards higher education?
Well, I have an identical twin sister. And both of us, by the way, have daughters who have both had twins. So we come from a long line of twins. My dad was a twin. Anyway, I'm an identical twin. And then 10 years later, we had another sister who was born. And, you know, we're all overachievers. And there was always an attitude of you will do well in school. Although none of us have any memories of our parents intruding on our homework. It's funny, I'm reading stories right now about should your child do homework on their bed or on the kitchen table, or should they have a dedicated desk? And it's like, we did it everywhere. I mean,
anywhere you were comfortable.
Wherever, and our house was so small. I mean, you know, it didn't matter if Gary Moore was on TV and my dad was eating at the kitchen table. You just found a place to do your homework.
Right.
And they didn't tell you to do it. They didn't supervise it, but it got done. And what I love is that all of us ended up in the helping professions. I ended up working in education. My twin sister ended up, she was the head of the California School for the Deaf in Riverside for 35 years. And my youngest sister is a physician. And so we laugh saying, how did that happen? But I think part of it is that we all loved school so much. My best childhood memory is we would go to school and then come home and play school and go to summer school all the time.
Oh, yes.
And then we spent spent our weekends at the library.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, we loved learning.
Yeah.
And our parents, it was an expectation, but not one that was ever shoved down our throat. Mm-hmm. They just, because neither of them had a chance to go to college. Mm-hmm. I know my dad, he always wanted to be a dentist and he had to work to raise a family and he never got to do that. Mm-hmm. And my mom, she's going to school now. She went back to school after my father passed away and she still takes a writing class and she takes quilting classes.
So awesome.
So she's an amazing woman. She's a lifelong learner for sure.
Well, that's great. I used to feel the same way about school. I was able to, because we lived way out in the country and I would see the bus go by and I wanted to get on it so bad. And I would cry when the bus would go by and I couldn't get on it. And my birthday is in December, so I could have, you know, waited a year and be a late baby. But my mom went to the school and said, and it's late December too, that, you know, she really wants to go. Can she please try?
Uh-huh.
And I was lucky that, you know, Layton was a small school and the principal allowed me to go in. And I just remember that excitement that first day when I finally got to get on that bus. And I just loved it. I loved school. I had such a positive experience all through school and high school. I joined every club possible. And it's sad when I hear kids that don't have that type of experience. But when I hear that there's someone who didn't experience that in high school, I don't want them to give up hope because they can have that in college.
Absolutely.
And they can, here on our campus, there are so many different ways that you can be involved and you can ingrain yourself and you can totally change your educational experience by being involved.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, as much as I loved elementary and junior high and high school, when I arrived at Fresno State, this university gave me my wings. I mean, you know, here I was a small town girl and all of a sudden I was taking philosophy, psychology, theater, foreign language classes, and the universe truly just opened up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if it weren't for this campus, really, you know, I would never have gone to Europe with the international program. I would have never become a writer. I was part of the summer arts program for 4 years. It just opened my eyes and you meet people from so many different walks of life. I mean, when I was on this campus, and still, you're going to school with people your own age, but people much older than you, much different than you, and you learn so much. I mean, I'll never forget in my first philosophy class, the professor asked us to do a paper on what we believe in, and here I was, this little 18-year-old, and you know what I believed? I believed in love and the rainbow, and he just... Totally shredded my belief system. But I went home very reflective and it was such a growthful, eye-opening experience. And, and you know, all my classes were. I had such great professors. And the student union was brand new at the time. So I made new lifelong friends between classes. And I just, I love this campus. It's great. And later on, when I worked in the field of education, it was so neat for me because our office put on events like Academic Decathlon that we partnered with the university. So I got to come back to Fresno State with all of our student decathletes. And, you know, I never told them this, but I would be supervising students and walking down the halls reliving my college days, feeling like I was 20 again.
Oh, that's great. Well, if that's all we have to do to be 20 again, we'll start walking the halls. So your bachelor's degree from Fresno State is in psychology.
Yeah.
What was it about psychology that made that your focus?
You know, I always loved communication and people and getting inside, underneath people's skin, and really getting to know them beyond the surface.
Yes.
And when I started the major, I sort of thought, well, I wanted to be a clinical psychologist and, again, be a helper, help people navigate through problems and through life. And I loved the psych department and learned so much. Alan Button was one of my favorite professors. He wrote a book called The Authentic Child. I still have it. I loved the human condition. So I always enjoyed learning about what makes people tick. And you know, why we behave the way we behave. I was very happy to get my degree there.
One of my favorite subjects to read is autobiographies.
Yes.
I always love to hear the story from the person's point of view. You know, biographies, you always get a little slant. But I love to read autobiographies, not just of famous people, but just people in general, it's just that same love of story and love of the experience and to hear what they felt like, how they got to that place. You know, it's all fascinating to me, you know.
Well, and you know what I think I'm learning the older I get is that we see people and we think they've got it all together. They look so put together. And I think all of us struggle with our own issues and go to bed at night worrying about whether it's our children, our parents, our work. You know, life is complicated. Mm-hmm. And for me, having a degree in psych, it helped kind of get the wheels turning for me. Mm-hmm. But the older I got and the more I threw myself into life and allowed myself to take risks and color outside the lines, I started finding out that we all really are kind of in this together.
Yes.
And the more we share what's going on inside, you know, the more we share our secrets, the more we find out, oh, those secrets I have are the same ones.
It's not unique to me.
Mary has those same secrets.
Right.
So it gives us permission to be human, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of my writing is about, is just, you know, being human and, you know, good days, bad days, in between days. And it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that the new book that's coming out, I've broken it up into sections because here we're talking about family and kind of our roots and how important they are to us and shaping kind of who we are. The beginning of my book is all about growing up in Fresno and you know, my ethnic background. And then I segue into being a mom, a grandmother. And then I have a whole section on friends. And then I talk a lot about love and loss. And then at the end of the book, I have a section on kind of life lessons and sacred advice. People I've met along my life's journey who have become just huge mentors to me. And there, a lot of them are strangers that, you know, you meet under very odd circumstances. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, I was in Rome. I was teaching. I was asked to teach for an international program. And I was standing in a hotel lobby and there was a woman across the lobby. She had to be in her 80s. She was wearing fishnet stockings. She had purple and yellow hair.
She had
an off-the-shoulder blouse on. And everybody, she was like a magnet. People were going up and talking to her. I knew she was somebody very important, but all I could do was look at the fishnets and the, you know, and say either she's really special or she's really a little off her rocker.
And there's not really much difference between the two.
There's a very fine line. Well, I found out that she works at Princeton. She's part of a huge international program. We became dear, dear friends by the end of my stay in Italy. And she's invited me to Princeton twice to go work with her.
Wow.
And she is one of the wisest, most beautiful inside and out souls I've ever met. And every time I leave her, she looks at me and makes fierce eye contact and says, Armin, I dare you to live your life.
Oh, beautiful.
And that has just become, that's what I go to bed with every night, because sometimes it's scary to live your life. It's a lot easier for all of us to find that comfort zone and to do what's safe. And I think it's people like her who really encouraged me to start a writing career at past my 50s and go back to school and push the envelope a little bit. So anyway, that's just, you know, you meet so many interesting people along the way, don't we?
And mentors can come in every form. Like you said, an unexpected interaction with a person, something will click between you and that person and you develop the friendship that you, you know, if you foster it, you can both benefit from. You talked to me a little bit earlier about when you told your parents you wanted to travel abroad.
Yes.
And I thought that that's a great story because I think that a lot of our students face the same type of thing. If they have an idea or they have a path that they are curious about following and they bring it up to their family, I think it's important for families to know that your reaction when a child or someone comes to you and they trust you to tell you their instinct, how it can affect you.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that story of and why you did want to be brave enough to try and go abroad.
You know, I was taking French classes on campus. Mm-hmm. I was taking 22 units one semester.
Oh, my goodness.
And because I wanted to master the language. Uh-huh. And I had taken French since I was in junior high, since seventh grade. And so I knew the language. I knew the written language, but I wasn't fluent conversationally. And one day in the spring, I was in the library. I was going to go study for finals in the stacks. And as I was walking up the stairs, I saw this sign that said Study Abroad, the CSU International Program. And all of a sudden, this light bulb went on. And it's like, I could become fluent if I lived in France, because I would, you know, fully immerse myself. I wouldn't be around Americans. And
you wouldn't have any other option.
I filled out, you know, the application, never thinking I would be accepted. It was just kind of a whim. Uh-huh. And a few months later, I got an acceptance. And when I went home all excited and told my parents, they said, absolutely not. You know, you live in Fresno, your family's here. Why would you want to leave this country, this great country of ours? And that was really, I mean, I think they were petrified of me being so far away from home. And remember, that was a time there was no email. I mean, it was just snail mail. That was it. There was no texting, no phone calls. And they said, no, you can't do this. And something in me, I was very determined. I said, I will get scholarships, because they also said, we won't support you financially to do this. And so I applied for a couple of scholarships and got them. And at the time, if you could get $2,000 worth of scholarships, you could live in Europe for a year. In fact, I think I came home with money.
Let me just say, goodness.
That's how different the times were then.
But them telling you that they weren't going to support you financially, what that did to you is made you determined to find a path to still make it happen.
Yes. In our family, we had a very strong work ethic. I mean, my baby said, I always worked while I was going to school. So that was not, it just let me know that they weren't going to put money into this part of my education. But eventually they became supportive. I mean, after we began corresponding, once I left and I arrived safely, and they realized that the program was supervised and that I was learning and that I was loving the experience so much, I started getting some very tender letters from my father, who was not a great communicator, but he wrote letters that are so cherished now that really let me know that his saying no was more out of love and fear than out of
his desire to protect you.
Yes. And in fact, after he passed, my mom gave me the big stack of letters that I had written home. And we reminisce oftentimes about what that year was like for them.
Yeah.
And it was traumatic. But when I came home, they were so proud of me.
Of course.
And that was, you know, a true catalyst for, I mean, our whole family grew as a result.
Uh-huh.
But also it opened doors for me. I mean, internationally, you know, I travel a lot now, and I traveled with my work. And I was insistent with my children also. When my daughter went to college, I said, I want you to be part of an international program. So she ended up living in Amsterdam for a semester. And then I realized exactly what my parents were going through, because I waited for those phone calls and emails and are you okay? And you know, when you go to Europe, you always have wild adventures. I mean, I was mugged one weekend on a night train.
Oh, no.
I had to wire home for money because I was mugged on a train crossing a border from France to Italy, and somebody stole my bag. And they chloroformed me, and I got kicked off the train because I didn't have a passport when we crossed the border.
And so
I had to wire home for SOS assistance and money. You know, and we all survive those. I mean, those are life, huge learning lessons.
But what a terrifying experience.
Yes.
Right.
But they gave me writing material later. So.
Yes. Like I said, every experience is valuable. Yeah,
exactly.
So at what point did you meet your husband, Dan? Tell us that story.
I came back. I started graduate school at Fresno State, and Dan also graduated from Fresno State, but he was in law school. And I met him in late 1975, and we fell madly in love, and it was like in that instant. And the interesting thing was, we both had a gazillion friends in common at Fresno State that we always hung out with at the student union and took classes with, but we had never met. And so it was, you know, it was magical. We met. 8 weeks later, we were engaged. And by summer, we got married. And a real whirlwind romance. It was very much so. But, you know, we're still, after 38 years, we're still married. So we're pretty happy about that.
So your instinct was right.
Yes. Thank goodness, huh? But Dan practices law. And, you know, I have to say, both of my sisters live out of town. One has moved from Pennsylvania to Chicago to Arizona, and now she's moving to Rochester, New York. And we both look at each other and say, I could never do that. We are so rooted to this community. We love Fresno.
Yes.
And our bond here is absolutely unbreakable. Mm-hmm. We love to travel, but coming home is the best.
Yes.
And so, I mean, we laugh about that, because as much as we love traveling to exotic destinations,
it's fun to go and see
it. There's no place like home. Dorothy was right.
Right, right. And I tell people that when they'll say, you know, what's the best thing about being at Fresno State? And I say, it's about being home.
Yes.
It's about, you know, having my parents just half an hour away. It's about watching Jess get to interact with his cousins. It's about the familiarity.
Yes, yes.
It's comfortable. It's an embrace. We have had the opportunity to live in some beautiful parts of the state, places that a lot of people would love to be at. But for us, this is it.
I think when your family and your roots are here, mm-hmm. and you have history here, I mean, I love going grocery shopping and running into somebody I haven't seen for 10 years and having a little sidebar conversation on aisle 12.
Right.
I mean, for me, that's so much fun. And I don't think there's a place we go in town. Or if you need something, you know, I need mm-hmm. a doctor or a hairdresser or a gardener or
somebody
knows somebody. And then at the end of the day, you find out you're all kind of related in some weird way. So I love that about Fresno.
Well, if you want to meet people, Julie, just walk with Armin. I mean, from the library just to down to the lobby. One person after the other stopping her. She's such a celebrity, I'm telling you. And everybody wanted to talk to her. And I can tell you're the type, just like me, you want to have a real conversation. You
yes.
don't just want to have a little stop and chat. But you can't do that with every single person or else you never get anything accomplished in the day. But it was fun coming over here with you and seeing you interact with a variety of people just in that short period of time. And everybody was so excited to see you. They were embracing you and congratulating you on the new book.
Thank you. Well, I'm very excited about the new book. You know, in my life, it's all about relationships. Mm-hmm. And so I love running into those people because half the time they don't realize that in one little 5-minute visit, they give me a wonderful nugget and an idea for a story
uh-huh.
and just to be able to make eye contact. You know,
right.
all of us are traveling so fast. We're multitasking and mm-hmm. on our, you know, iPhones and our texting and emailing that when you get a face-to-face and that real eye contact, that's magical for me. Oh my gosh, that fuels me for days. Mm-hmm. So it was very fun this morning to run into so many people. I loved it.
Well, the first time that I heard you was at the Women's Campus Connection, and that's when you were talking about your book, Griefland.
Yes.
And that was a book that came out of a very painful experience for you and a subject that I know that many of us probably shy away from talking. How do you tap into and open yourself up to discuss things that are uncomfortable?
You know, I feel, Mary, like, first of all, you know, when we lost our son, nobody was talking. Nobody was saying his name.
Oh.
And everybody was afraid that it would hurt us more.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a strange experience because you want to hear the stories. Every so often I would get a card and somebody would share, like his kindergarten teacher wrote me a letter and shared an experience that she had had with Alex in the school library.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I held onto that memory. It was magic for me. But most people shy away. That's a very uncomfortable topic to write about.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, writing was the only thing that was saving my life during my darkest hours of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting enough, 4 years after Alex passed, I got a call from Fresno State. There was a teacher on campus whose daughter had died on Christmas Day. And they said, we don't know what to say. We want to reach out. Can mm-hmm. you help? And when Nancy Miller, my co-author, and I got together, we shared this common bond immediately. And the reality was she was experiencing the same thing I was. People were distancing themselves. They didn't want to offend or hurt her. They weren't mentioning her daughter's name. She felt like she was a leper all of a sudden.
Right.
And we decided, you know what? We need to lift this veil of darkness. We need to talk about grief
mm-hmm.
because, you know, we're living in an era of loss. People are losing aging parents. We're losing colleagues. We're losing our youth. People are losing breasts. We're losing, you know, there's a lot of loss. It's all around
mm-hmm.
us. And it's a part of life. And so we decided to document our journey for a year. And it was hard. I mean, it was very hard to do that. But we felt that walking through that fire and writing about it would either melt us
mm-hmm.
or illuminate us and help share our story and lift the veil for others,
mm-hmm.
which it has done very much so. I mean, we're invited to speak at so many different conferences and events throughout the state, city, and nation.
Yes.
And we're finding that people are intrigued with how do you survive?
Mm-hmm.
And what we're learning is that the human spirit is full of resiliency.
Yes.
And what we're telling, whether it's moms, dads, siblings, this is survivable. You can survive a loss of this magnitude, but it's a lot of work. But the world wants and needs more of you. And so you get up every morning, you live in 5-minute increments, you hold somebody's hand, mm-hmm. you don't be afraid to ask for help. And there will be good days and not so good days.
Right.
But every morning you wake up and you get to start all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're happy we wrote the book, but Griefland is very different than My Name is Armin.
I think
Griefland gave me permission to find joy again in my life. And mm-hmm. so you'll find that in this new book, it really embraces life and shares a lot of happy moments and precious moments with the reader.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your gift with us and for your ability to tell all types of stories and to help people to embrace our differences in our life journey. We're so fortunate to be able to call you an alumna of Fresno State, and we thank you for being here and being our guest this morning.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you, Mary, so much. Thank you both. And again, I mean, my gratitude, this campus gave me wings, heart, permission to become a writer. If it weren't for Fresno State, I doubt that I'd be interviewed right now, and I don't think I'd be published either. So thank you both.
We will put up the link for your book, and we hope that our listeners will check it out.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to our very special guest, author and columnist Armin Bacon, and of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. First Ladies Focus is brought to you in part by Educational Employees Credit Union, EECU, smarter banking since 1934. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.